story. And then I'm going to focus on a few points using the words again to my title, which is Nephesh, a shepherd's staff, and eating with enemies. But let's look at Psalm 23 right now and read this. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores or refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Okay, let's focus on a few things out of this psalm, starting with Nephesh. I love verse 2. Excuse me. It says that the shepherd, who is God, makes us lie down in green pasture and leads us beside quiet waters and restores our soul, which sounds so poetic and beautiful, and it is, but it's also amazingly important for our lives. So let me talk for a minute about having souls that are restored. First, if you want your soul restored, the first thing you have to do is recognize that you have one, and we all do, okay? The word for soul that's used here is the Hebrew word nephesh. You could have guessed that probably. And it means essence. It's your inner person. It's the part of you that makes you uniquely you, because all of us are more than the sum of our body parts. We have bodies, but we're more than just bodies. I love how the poet Andrea Gibson states this. She says, "None of us have ever been our bodies. If we were, how could we fit into each other's hearts?" That's so great. We're far more than just a body. Now, in our culture, we try pretty hard to take care of our bodies for the most part. We eat right, exercise, get enough sleep, all that kind of stuff, get your flu shot. But we don't do very well at soul care. We fail there a lot. The number one thing that our souls need to be healthy is this: stillness. That's what your soul needs. That's why God makes us go to the green pastures and leads us to the quiet waters. God takes us into stillness because that's what our souls require. That's what our souls really need. The problem is we resist this journey into stillness all too often because we live in a rushed, rat race kind of culture. We're always in a hurry. And many of us feel hurried even when there's nothing urgent in our schedule. That's because hurry has become a habit for most of us. I want to read you a version of Psalm 23 that was written by someone in a hurry and that was also a workaholic. She writes this: "The clock is my dictator. I shall not rest. It makes me lie down only when I'm exhausted. It leads me to the deep depression. It hounds my soul. It leads me in circles of frenzy for activity's sake. Even though I run frantically from task to task, I will never get it all done, for my ideal is with me. Deadlines and my need for approval, they drive me. They demand performance from me beyond the limits of my schedule. They anoint my head with migraines, and my in-basket overflows. Surely fatigue and time pressure shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the bonds of frustration forever." Now, I read that, and I laughed. I giggled a little bit, but sadly, that describes many people's lives these days, maybe even some of ours in this room. And instead of our souls, our nephesh being refreshed, our souls are being detonated by the alarmingly fast and hurried and rushed pace of our lives. We're blowing them apart. Now, I realize that stillness is very countercultural, and it's actually kind of counterintuitive for most of us because we often base our self-worth on what we do. So we got to stay busy if we're basing our self-worth on what we do, because if we're not busy, we feel worthless and inadequate. But there's a way out of this madness. There's a freedom from the tyranny of busyness and hurry. And it happens when we recover the right rhythms of life as it was always intended to be. Let me explain. In the beginning of the Bible, there's a creation poem that starts the Bible, and it's beautiful. And in it, we're told that God created everything in 6 days. And on the seventh day, God rested, so God was still. Now, here's the catch. Mankind was created on the sixth day, and the next day there was rest. So life for human beings literally started with rest. That's the first thing we did, was rest before we did any work, any activities, any creating, anything. And that shows us that right off the bat, a healthy soul starts with a rhythm of rest. And here's the super cool part. God will actually bloom into your stillness. Psalm 46, which Gene quotes a lot and I love it, "Be still and know that I am God." So first comes the stillness and then the awareness and connection with God. Mother Teresa says, "We can't find God in noise or agitation. God is a friend of the silence, the stillness." And St. Vincent de Paul, he's not just a store in Eugene, okay? He said this, "The one who hurries delays the things of God, misses out on the things of God." So rest leads to stillness. Stillness leads to a deeper connection with God, and that is just the best thing for our souls. It won't be easy, though, to break the habit of hurry, but don't worry, God will help us here. I promise you this will happen in your life if you're aware of it. When your life gets too busy, you'll experience what I call a divine insistence to slow down. It'll be the presence of God constantly and lovingly reminding you to rest, constantly but lovingly guiding you towards the quiet waters and the green pastures. May we all follow that guidance, because our souls will thank us when we do. Now let's talk about a shepherd's staff. In verse 4, the psalmist says, "I will fear no evil," which always catches my attention because I struggle with fear and anxiety all the time, and I fear all kinds of evil right now, all kinds of evil. I can easily doom scroll my way through a day. I fear lots of evil. But let's examine that statement closer. The psalmist writes that he fears no evil because, "God, your rod and your staff comfort me." Most people have no idea what that means because we're not shepherds. Now, first of all, before I explain that, the Hebrew word for shepherd is ra'ah, R-A'ah, and it means also best friend. So the picture Psalm 23 paints for us is that God, our shepherd, our best friend, is constantly caring for us, thinking about us, and watching over us. Right off the bat, reading that makes me feel less afraid. But it appears that the whole rod and staff statement is also key to fearing no evil, and it is. The rod and the staff are actually two parts of the same tool, a shepherd's staff. And you've probably seen pictures of shepherd's staff. They're really tall sticks, that would be a big bug. They're really tall sticks with a hook on the end. And these shepherd's staff represent, among other things, protection and direction. Because at the time this psalm was written, a shepherd would have a staff, and if a predator came to attack the helpless sheep, sheep bite, but not very hard, and they're not very scary animals, so a shepherd would have to take the staff and use it as a club to whack the predators away. The shepherd would also use the staff as a loving prod to prod the sheep, because sheep wander off and get lost easy, to prod them back on the right path, the right direction, so they wouldn't get lost and separated from the flock. Now put a comma there, I'll come back to it, but I want to talk about fear and anxiety for a second. When fear and anxiety hit me, and they do every so often, I feel untethered. It's really hard to explain how I feel inside, but the best way I can describe it to you is I feel like I'm spinning inside so fast that I might just fly off into space, which is my worst nightmare. I think that would be the worst way to go, floating off into space. But I've learned in these untethered moments, one of the best things I can do, and I do this, is take off my shoes and socks and walk outside, even if it's freezing cold outside and raining. In fact, sometimes that's better. And when I do that, I feel grounded. I feel tethered. I feel connected to something bigger and more solid than myself, not just the earth. I do feel that. But somehow in those moments, I feel tethered and connected to God in a very real way. I know that God is always with me, guiding me and protecting me. And that also grounds me. That knowledge, that thought that God's with me, he's my shepherd, caring for me, looking out for me, that grounds me. And I know that ultimately, because of this truth, like the psalmist, I have nothing to fear. Not even the valley of the shadow of death, which sounds scary and ominous when it's read in this psalm. It's like, cue the creepy violin music with that. I don't want to go through the valley of the shadow of death. But I wouldn't even have to fear that, because no matter what happens in my life, I'm convinced that I have this indestructible and infinite core inside of me. This part of me that's not rattled by any of my circumstances or what's going on in the world or our nation, and it doesn't know fear. It doesn't know fear at all. I awaken to that part of me when I am aware of the constant nearness of God, my shepherd. Whenever I'm aware of God's presence in my life, I'm awakened to that indestructible and infinite core. I love, again, how Andrea Gibson, the poet, describes it. She says this: healing was learning that no one has ever laid a fingerprint on the part of me that's infinite. Oh, that's so good. We will fear no evil when we realize that God is with us. He protects us, he directs us, and nobody can damage the core of us. Those are the moments we will fear no evil. Now let's eat, end with eating with enemies. Verse 5 talks about how God prepared a table, and the psalmist sat down to this feast in the presence of his enemies. And when you read the psalm, especially for the first time, I'm tempted to think that the psalmist is sitting down here, and the enemies are around him, and he's basically eating this feast and saying, "Sucks to be you, doesn't it? I have a feast. You have bubkis. You've got nothing. You can just stand there and watch me eat and think about how evil you are, you little trolls." That's what I imagine that what was going on here. But God would never partner with something so petty and rude. This is actually not what the psalm is about. The psalm is about love. You see, in Bible times, a table, when it says, "He prepares a table for me in the presence of my enemies," a table is often used as an image to communicate fellowship and belonging and friendship between two people that have a meal together. And having a meal at this time together was a big deal. That's why Jesus got constantly mocked by the religious leaders, because he would eat with anybody. He would eat with outlaws and prostitutes and outcasts and even people that were considered enemies. How dare he? That was so scandalous. But when he did this, he was giving people this really important message. He was saying, "These are my people that I'm eating with. You might have rejected them, but I never will." That was always his message. But back to Psalm 23. In this psalm, God is actually the host of the dinner. Don't know if you caught that. He prepares the table, gets the food, sets everything up. And then who does God invite to come to the feast with us? The people we consider enemies. So here's the picture, okay? We are led to quiet waters. Our nefesh, our souls are refreshed. And then God has us show up at a dinner with people we consider to be poo-poo heads. That's Psalm 23 in a nutshell. And God does it on purpose. Why would God do this? The answer is because God is totally into community. There's a pastor, his name is Lamar Hardwick. Man, he's brilliant. And I want to read to you what he says about this. He says, "Inclusion of all kinds is not always a priority in some Christian communities, because we have found satisfaction in the safety of sameness." I want you to call attention to those last few words. We have found satisfaction in the safety of sameness in so many churches. That is so true. I think a lot of churches resemble this image that I found. The Oompa Loompas from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Just a whole bunch of people that dress, act, talk, think, and sound the same. And it's creepy. Their sameness is creepy. God is not into sameness. God is into true community, and true community always, always involves diversity. So if you plan on following Jesus, and I hope you do, get ready for Jesus to lead you into so many uncomfortable situations in your life, like being friends with people that are totally different from you, and loving people, even having dinner with people that are your enemies, or if you don't consider them your enemies, at least with people that annoy the living bejeebers out of you, those kind of people. But get this is huge. For the psalmist, table fellowship with people he considered to be his enemies is what opened the door for him to experience a life that was blessed beyond belief. That's why, look at the order here. First he has this dinner with his enemies, and then he says this, God, you anoint my head with oil. Oil symbolized the presence of the Holy Spirit. So it's this picture of the Holy Spirit just drenching and immersing the psalmist. God, excuse me, you anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely love and goodness will follow me all the days of my life. So many people in the world today, so many people that I come across have cups that are empty. Their lives seem completely devoid of any kind of blessing, and God seems so very far away to them. Perhaps that's because many of us have refused to have fellowship and friendship with anyone who challenges us, anyone who annoys us, anyone who disagrees with us, or even anybody who's different than us. We've canceled those people out of our lives and canceled God's blessing flowing into our lives in the process. It's so sad. It doesn't have to be this way. Look what Pastor Lamar says about this. I love this. We can't continue to live this way. We can't continue to do church this way in sameness. We can't continue to damage our faith in this way. There are people who need to drink from overflowing cups. There are people who need to experience overflowing love. And instead of overflowing cups, they find empty cups at empty tables with empty seats because we can't find it within us to accept God's invitation to a life of greater satisfaction and greater significance found only at the table. And that's it all. And that's so good. We don't have to be the same. I'm not calling everybody to be the same, but we have to be together if we want to experience all that God has for us. I'm going to call Linda up here. She's going to end us today with some announcements, and then I'm going to pop back up here, and I just want to have a little, I'm going to read something really short to you and send you on your week that will be so great for your souls. It will help in the process of refreshing your souls. Okay, Linda? Linda?